We actually did a deal with Jessica Ennis. We were looking for a Team GB athlete, and there probably wasn't a huge choice. I think we probably had a shortlist of 4 or 5.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton, and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of everything that goes on in the talent industry. In this episode, we are joined by Mark Osikoya. Mark is the CEO of Commonwealth Games England, overseeing Team England's preparations for the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow 2026. Prior to that, he led the NBA's partnerships in Europe for 8 years, and that came after running Coca-Cola's sponsorship of London 2012. I started by asking him, what is the one piece of advice he'd give athletes to make the most of their commercial opportunities?
I don't think there's one thing. Across everything, where we've got the best, or where you've worked best with athletes, or the athletes have worked best with a brand or a rights holder, is I think where they're just... There's sort of a bit of honesty in terms of what the expectation is going into the partnership from the brand or the rights holder. And there's equally a bit of honesty from the athlete or the athlete management about what the athlete can bring. So I think having that honest conversation at the outset is very important, because otherwise you end up trying to match something, so match expectations to something that just can't be delivered.
And is there a big difference? Because you've obviously worked brand side, you know, for the sponsors who work with the athletes, but you've also been on the rights holder side and now are running a rights holder. Is the relationship a bit different? Do you see as a rights holder a bit more that you're sort of a friend and counsel to the athlete versus if you're just a sponsor?
I don't know, so long ago since I did the sponsor stuff, I can't remember. But I think it is different, because I think we as Team England, the Commonwealth Games England, have a responsibility for the athletes as well in terms of their career development, what happens to them post-career. We've just started up an alumni program, Team England Legends, which, you know, part of that is about focusing on people who are current athletes, but also people that are used to represent Team England as well. And really the reason to do that is, one is to try and create a community amongst those people, but also I think as a secondary objective is to try and offer them opportunities post-career. And that, I think, is something that we have a responsibility to do as a rights holder, that as a brand, you know, I think it's a much more sort of clinical and probably commercial in terms of what the relationship is all about. So I think we are looking more long-term. You know, in terms of that Legends programme, we're looking for people to join who represent Team England at the Youth Games. And that can be people as young as 17. All the way through to people that have retired. So I think it's more about looking at the whole journey as an athlete and trying to offer something in terms of support as a rights holder at various stages of that journey.
Is that very different? Because obviously you're an international multi-sport competition. Is that very different to when you were at the NBA and actually you're representing a sport, which probably is closer now to the members that you would have as the Commonwealth Games?
Yeah, very different. And also what's obviously different about the NBA is that, you know, one of the key stakeholders in the NBA is the Players Association. And the Players Association are sat around the table when the NBA are negotiating big broadcast deals. They have a say in that.
And they look after the players.
They're representing the players. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I think there's a recognition within the NBA framework, and I think the NFL as well, but I might be wrong, where, you know, the players and the role that the players play as a key stakeholder has much more importance than it does, I think, in some of the sports that we have over here. And so that's probably a main difference between the role of the players within the NBA and how we work with our athletes over here.
Because this is fascinating. I had no idea about that. And obviously I've worked in the sports industry for quite a while. Like, what do they do in the room? Are they just an observer and an input, or do they actually are they like a union?
They are a union, yeah, yeah. I mean, so it's similar to the PFA over here. But I think I think things are changing over here with the PFA, and I do think they have more of a seat at the table. But the seat at the table is probably a bit more distant than it is with the NBA. I was never part of those negotiations with the NBA, so I can't tell you whether they sat in the room or not. But, you know, every cycle, the NBA has to negotiate a deal with the players about minimum salaries, about, you know, the percentage that players can get paid, etc., etc. So they, without that deal, and this has happened sometimes, there's a lockout. And if there's a lockout, that means there's no NBA games. And so they are absolutely fundamental to making the whole thing work. And I think there's a recognition of that within the structure and the decision-making structure as well. Over here, I think certainly with football, it is changing, but it is different. It is very different. It's a long way from that.
Sounds great. This sounds like the premise of a movie. I'm going to start tuning in when there's
suddenly
a player strike, and it's going to be great. Anyway, so one of the other things that I wanted to come back to, I know you said that you can't necessarily remember your days as a sponsor or brand side as clearly, but you did work on London 2012, and now we're kind of a crazy amount of time after that. You know, we're planning for LA 2028 as the next Olympics. How have you seen things change in terms of how athletes are treated, how athletes are treated as brands, as humans, as competitors in that period?
Well, around 2012, my main memory is actually working for Coca-Cola as a sponsor. I did work for the rights holder as well, but only for probably a year and a half. And at the time, from a Coca-Cola point of view, we didn't have any relationships with athletes over here. But we did have, part of the Coke portfolio was Powerade, and we were looking for ambassadors to represent Powerade. And we actually did a deal with Jessica Ennis, and Richard Whitehead. So we were looking for an Olympian, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time, probably, you know, and this was obviously pre the Channel 4 coverage, etc. I think us trying to do a deal across both was, I wouldn't say it was groundbreaking, but it was quite new. And I know a lot of the other partners did it as well. Whereas now you fast forward, and I think it's very difficult for a brand to go into the Olympic world without going to the Paralympic world. It's almost like a given. So I think that's one thing that has changed a lot. And equally, you know, at the time we were looking for a British or Team GB athlete, and there probably wasn't a huge choice. I think we probably had a shortlist of 4 or 5 athletes that we were considering, and we ended up going with Jess because multi-discipline in terms of the heptathlon. And we were looking for a female athlete as well, so that worked quite well. Whereas now, again, I think that's changed. I think around the Olympics, certainly, and the build-up to the Olympics, there's probably more household names, possibly. Athletes are used more widely, and so people, they're probably more widely recognised at that period. Obviously, fast forward to post-games, and that drops off the cliff a bit. But I think the choice of athletes now is much wider than it was then. Couldn't tell you about the fees. I've no idea what the fees are now. But I think that was probably, they're the two main differences, I would say.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because back in the day, I'm old enough to remember these days, unfortunately, we used to all be able to name certainly all the gold medalists for Team GB out of an Olympics, and often quite a lot of the medalists. Mm. Whereas now, there's so many people to choose from for brands. When you're kind of sitting in your job, or even if you're speaking to counterparts in the industry and they're asking advice, because that's what we should all be doing all the time, what are you looking for someone to stand out? Because it's not really enough now, is it? Like, just a gold medal.
No, it's definitely not enough. Well, I think being authentic is really important for athletes. And I think, again, it was a long, long time ago, as you keep mentioning. But one of the reasons we landed on Jess when we were at Coke is because she was authentic. And I think that still rings true now. So I think you know, athletes are not sort of trying too hard to curate their image, and they come across as being authentic is really important. I think not stretching yourself too thin as well. I think there is probably a temptation maybe for some of the bigger athletes to be spread across a number of different partners. And I think, you know, from a brand point of view, you do want to have some sort of authenticity with that particular athlete rather than the athlete being seen across 4 or 5 different campaigns. So I think they're probably the things that I would call out.
What about, you know, it's a difficult time economically. There isn't as much money floating around the sports industry for multiple different reasons that's been kind of happening in waves. And so again, it is easy when you're looking for PR coverage, or you're looking for people who are recognisable, to go, right, we'll just choose people with the biggest personalities who've got the gold medals.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for younger athletes who are kind of thinking, well, I might be the next big thing, and actually I have got something to offer. How do I get someone to take a punt on me?
I think it's about understanding what the partner or the potential partner can bring to you, where you want to get to and what the partner can bring to you. And I think one of the things I probably should have mentioned in the previous answer is around, you know, where an athlete might have a particular cause or charity or something that is important to them as well, that aligns with what a partner's trying to do, that might make a difference. You know, as an example, if a athlete is particularly passionate about sustainability and there's a particular initiative that they support that an athlete, that a brand can help raise the profile of as well, I think they're the sort of additional things I think that now help, rather than it becoming purely transactional about how much is the fee going to be and how many appearances am I going to give. So I think if you can build it into something a bit broader, I think that's really important. And again, one of the, you know, one of the benefits we had at the time with Coca-Cola was Coca-Cola partnered with Street Games as well, which is a charity, which I'm now on the board of, ironically. And a lot of the initiatives that Street Games were delivering around London 2012, you know, we were looking for athletes that we partnered with at the Games to help support those. So you want some sort of, you want someone that's got either an affinity with that particular project, or in the case of Street Games, can talk authentically about coming from, you know, an underrepresented community, or not a traditional background. So I think there's other elements that you can bring to it that isn't just about cash and appearances.
Well, yeah. I mean, even if they're thinking that, let's encourage them to tell their stories and ask what your objectives are. How important is it that the athlete is proactive? Like, where is the balance between pester power being impactful and you just feeling pestered and like you never want to hear the athlete's name again if they're trying to get you to give them an opportunity?
It is a delicate balance. I mean, again, the other element that we've not talked about in all of this is the athlete's management.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a big role to play in this.
Good one or a bad one?
A good one. So I think certainly when you're dealing with brands like Coca-Cola, a good one, because it's very rare at Coke, you know, Coca-Cola, sorry, that we would deal directly with Jessica Ennis. We would deal through Jessica Ennis's management team. So a lot of the time, your perception of the athlete and their, I don't know what you called it, pestability, is probably a perception of the management team.
Yeah.
So I think that choice is very, very important for an athlete from that point of view.
Well, you literally are representation as
you
the
are.
Management team.
Yeah, yeah. So I think a lot of the time, a lot of these choices you're making and a lot of the perception you're getting is based on what is being delivered by the management team. So your choice of who represents you is obviously pretty fundamental.
Was there ever a time where you have actually had such a relationship with the management team that you would think, oh, I wonder who else they represent? Or was it more always, okay, well, I'm interested in this athlete, fingers crossed their representation are nice, or I might need to look at someone else?
Yeah. I don't think so. Again, my experience at Coca-Cola was a bit different because the two big individual representations we did were, one was with Jessica Ennis and obviously with Richard Whitehead as well at the same time. And then the second one was with Wayne Rooney.
For people who don't know who he is, he's a footballer.
He's a husband of Colleen. He's a manager now, isn't he?
Yeah.
I suppose he's a pundit. He's a pundit.
He's everything.
That's what he
seems,
is. Yeah. So Wayne's situation was quite unique, I think, in that he had a management team that literally represented him and Colleen and very few others, and they were very protective about Wayne. And one of the things that they offered Wayne was that, you know, he wasn't part of a suite of athletes, which was good up to a point, but it also meant, you know, it could be quite challenging because it became quite difficult to sort of, sometimes it was quite difficult to get the management team to see the broader picture because obviously they just focused on what's best for Wayne. So I think it works both ways. I mean, that situation worked better for that particular athlete at the time. But equally, you know, if you're an up-and-coming athlete, I guess in certain instances it might be beneficial if you're part of a pool of athletes, some of whom have at different stages of their career, so you can either get advice from them or, as you've suggested, maybe it might open doors. But I personally haven't found that, but I can see how it could work that way.
Well, I think it's that interesting thing, isn't it? Which probably isn't the case if you're Wayne Rooney, but if you're most other people, you might be a fantastic athlete with the best track record in the world, but you might suddenly want to become a TV presenter, and people aren't going to suddenly pay you the same thing they're going to pay Claire Balding just because you've got a gold medal somewhere. Yeah. Maybe if you want to be a pundit, but you need doors to open, that's not necessarily financially advantageous for your management. So sometimes you need to seek your own opportunities, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I imagine that's also where somewhere like the Commonwealth Games, or Commonwealth Games England, let's not talk for the other nations, could provide those opportunities for athletes where you could say, well, we will take a punt on you, because you're part of our alumni, like, we will try and give you a stepping stone into new areas. Is that something you would do?
Well, we have done, actually. I mean, one good example is over the last couple of years, we've created this role at board level that's called Board Apprentice. That's what we've called it. I mean, you could call it anything, but essentially we have Orland Jackman doing that role now. And Orland is a gold medalist from Birmingham 2022, 3-on-3 basketball. But he was sort of keen to look at getting on a board of a sport or governing body. But, you know, to do that, it's the same dilemma that you have when you're trying to get into sport, where you need experience to be able to do it. But without experience, you're not going to get to do it unless someone takes a punt on you. So we created a role where he essentially sits as part of our board meetings for 2 years. He comes along, he participates, he's not a voting board member. And that enables him after 2 years to then be able to say, look, I've had board experience. And when another role comes up, he's then better placed to be able to do that. So I think that is a really good example of where, you know, as an ex-athlete, he's looked at what he wants to do. There's not a direct route in, and we've been able to sort of help him by creating this role within our board framework, a governance framework, that allows him to get the experience he needs to then benefit, hopefully, in the next role he gets. And it might be that there's a board role comes up at Commonwealth Games England and he's best placed to step into it. But without the experience that he'd had as part of this programme, he probably wouldn't have been able to do that.
That's amazing. So how did that happen? Did he come to you with that, or did you create the position and he applied?
We were looking for a board member. He applied, was really enthusiastic in the process, very proactive. And actually we felt that at the time there was people that were sort of had better board experience from an ex-athlete point of view. So he didn't get that role, but he was so engaging and he was so passionate about wanting to get on the board that actually we thought, you know what, we've got the flexibility to be able to do this, so we'll create this position for him. So we didn't go out and recruit the position. The impact that he had as part of the recruitment process for the full board role meant that we felt there was an opportunity there, and he's embraced it. And I think the second year will end after Glasgow 26, so he's well into his second year, and he has been, he's been really good. He's also, from a board point of view as well, I think it's important that we A, have an athlete voice, yeah, and B, that we represent different demographics as well, both age-wise and socially as well. And Orlan is the younger end of the demographic from, I'm not speaking out of turn for my fellow board members, but he is probably the younger end of the demographic as well, and I think it's important to have that voice as well. So it's not only about what we've delivered for him, it's about what I think he's delivered for us as a board as well, and it's been really positive.
That's very cool. Well, so my last question is, for those who might be listening and thinking, no, I've had a great career in sport, but I don't want to be in the public eye anymore. I was in the public eye by default because I like doing my sport, but I would love to still work in or around sport. Based on your experience in the sports industry due to your career, like, what advice would you give people in terms of getting that experience to be taken into consideration? I know athletes have transferable skills, but they're very transferable. They're not necessarily bang on. Like, where would you advise that people start to then begin to have a career like yours has been? Which is, of course, irreplicable.
Oh, God. I think if you want to get into the commercial side of sport, I think that is probably a bit more challenging than, you know, the route that Orland's taken, for example, where, you know, and actually another one, I know she's probably a slightly different situation, but we have just appointed Dame Laura Kenny as our president. Now, that is an honorary role, so she can sit as part of the board if she wants to, she can choose not to if she doesn't want to, she can engage with us as much or as little as she wants to do, but she's chosen to do that on a voluntary basis because I think there's opportunities there. I think she sees it as a way maybe of getting us to where she wants to get to in her post-cycling career as well. But that's a different route. That's more of a sort of a governance route to get to somewhere else. I think in terms of the commercial stuff, ultimately, I think you've probably got to be flexible in terms of what level you're looking at, what sport you might want to engage with. Again, I think, you know, it's not necessarily about an athlete from a certain sport wanting to just focus solely on that particular sport. I think you can get broader experience working across other sports. I think there's a whole load of ways in now as well. So it doesn't have to be a governing body. It doesn't have to be a brand or a sponsor. And those roles are increasingly few and far between. Can be with an agency, as an example. And there's plenty of, I think, small, medium-sized agencies there that would be very happy to take people on more of a sort of, not a permanent basis maybe, but more of an ad hoc basis. So I think it's about getting the level of experience that you need through whatever channel that might be, and not being too restrictive about it has to be a sponsor or it has to be a rights holder. And then once you get there, I think that then opens the doors further down the line. But I do think that maybe the governance routine is an interesting way of doing it, because also the other advantage of being part of or around a board is that it also opens up your network. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably 8, 9, 10 other board members there, most of whom will probably now, because of the sports governance code, be independent, so they'll be external people. They can open up your network to a vastly wider group of people than you would do if you didn't take on something like that. So I think it's maybe about thinking a bit more laterally, thinking about a bit more, you know, how do I use this opportunity to then open up doors that might get me to where I need to, rather than just thinking about it has to be the right opportunity in the right sport next time around.
Well, we are all about thinking laterally here at Anatomy of an Agency. In fact, our latest revolutionary idea is that you should listen to some of our old podcast episodes. We have had some fantastic guests over the last year, so please do go and check them out. You can also get in touch, gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com or on social media @goodvibesonlytalent. But until next week, from me for now, it is goodbye.